What's up, everybody? Nate Lurie back with more of We're the Inspiration. With some dark humor and brutal honesty, we are exploring the absurdity and normalcy of living with disabilities. Stories are told on this show, and everyone's is different. One by one, we're going to tell as many as we can while bringing you the most entertaining podcast about disabilities you'll ever hear. On this week's show, I have another person I know from the Spina Bifida conferences they used to have. He's from Texas, but he's living in Ireland right now. And we're going to talk about that and a whole lot more. Mr. Eric Edling, thank you for being the inspiration for this week's show.
Thanks for having me.
How's it going, man?
I'm good. It's a little crazy right now.
Oh, it's crazy everywhere.
It's crazy everywhere. It's crazy everywhere. But 4,500 miles away from home in a country that I don't have any sort of like citizenship with.
Yeah, that can't be easy. We will talk about that. But before we do, like I said, I know you from the Spina Bifida conferences. And in my opinion, there were three types of people that we would run into at those conferences. One type were the type to start conversations. That's probably me. There were some people that would kind of keep to themselves, but there was a third type that would want to be included, want to hang out, but not say much. I feel like you were in that third group.
That actually hit the nail right on the head. And part of the reason why I decided to do this was back when I was going to conference, that was between the ages of like 13 and 21. There were a lot of things that were going on in my head, a lot of things that I felt, a lot of the things I wanted to say, and a lot of people I wanted to be friends with. I had no idea how to say it, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the big things that I wanted to talk about, and we'll just go ahead and do it. You contacted me and Ashley when she was on the show. Mm-hmm. You had heard her episode specifically, and I just got in touch with you. I was like, you want to do the show too? And you said, yeah, let's do it. So what was it about her doing this show that sort of resonated with you?
It's been a few years since I've been involved with anything to do with conference.
Sure.
Like I said, I'm 27, and last time I went to a conference was I was 21.
Well, they don't hold them anymore. I think they ran out of money.
They don't hold... See, that's how badly disconnected I am, because I had no idea. Or maybe I knew at one point, but I'd forgotten.
Well, I've said it on the show before, but you haven't listened to every episode, so...
Sorry.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
Right, yeah, yeah, so there were a lot of things at the time when I was a kid up to early adulthood where I wanted to say something, I wanted to be involved, but I had no idea how to say it. And I think that being able to talk about it might actually help me sort of verbalize what I wanted to say, which will come up later. I don't have anything specific on my mind, and sort of explain some things about myself that I feel like didn't really come across. Definitely didn't come across.
Well, I always thought you were a nice guy. You were just quiet.
I didn't realize this until I came out of it. I was anxious just about 24/7. I was in fight or flight mode almost constantly. I didn't know how to talk. I didn't really know how to communicate or grow deep friendships. I just knew that I didn't want anybody else to feel the way that I did.
Wow. It's kind of a powerful thing to know that. Because I feel like a lot of people that feel that way, like, I don't want you to feel the way that I do. I feel like a lot of people that feel that way end up hurting themselves.
Like physically?
Well, in whatever way.
In whatever way, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Just like inflicting some sort of pressure release.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, kind of, maybe a little bit. There were a couple of years where I would sort of incrementally introduce myself to things that freaked me out. If I had a friend who was going to do something that I wanted to do, it's like, oh, you're going to do something crazy? I'll go with you. So that sort of leveled it off a little bit. Self-harm was never really my thing because, you know, with disability, we have a different relationship with pain. It's a roadblock. It's something we want to escape. It's something we want to move past. Whereas a lot of the able-bodied people that I know who practice self-harm, I don't know if that's the correct way to put that, do it because they feel a sense of empowerment. I've never felt a sense of empowerment because of pain.
Yeah, neither have I. I mean, tell you the truth, my back hurts right now and I'm just kind of tuning it out, but that doesn't really make me feel powerful. I'm just used to it.
I had a friend, she went to get a shot and she burst into tears, and someone who knew me said, "Oh, Eric would be ashamed of you." I remember thinking, no, I wouldn't. Like, I hate shots. the only reason they don't bother me is because I've had thousands of them.
Right.
You know, I go to a doctor and they have like the flu shot, and you'll see me go, and that's me having a full 3-second existential freak out before the needle goes in. So yeah, I've never felt empowerment from pain. I've just been used to it. And it's like, if I have to go through more, it's like, whatever, but I'm not going to look for it.
Again, I don't feel empowerment from pain either, but depending on how people express their pain, if somebody just says, mm-hmm. like, my back hurts or my leg hurts or something like that, in my presence, I'll be very sarcastic with people sometimes, but when it comes to something simple like that, I'll just look at them and be like, how do you think I feel? You
know? Yeah, there's a line to walk there, because on the one hand, you want to maintain perspective, but at the same time, you know, everyone carries pain differently.
Sure.
Invalidating somebody's pain because you don't feel the same way is like, what hurts me may be no big deal to somebody else.
Right. And again, like we said, there are different types of pain. You can understand, you can empathize with something that would physically hurt a person, I think, pretty easily. It can be harder, I think, to empathize sometimes with emotional pain.
Yeah. You know, I've had friends where it was like, I would see them go through things that were traumatic. And, you know, you and I get hit with that whole, you know, be inspiring, move past it, don't right. make a big deal of it sort of attitude. So when we see other people, I mean, at least for me, it's not that I invalidate, but I just kind of look at it. I have a hard time really understanding the full sort of effect of it, because trauma goes deep. But we don't always see it. We just see the inciting incident and then the aftermath where you're supposedly okay later. We don't necessarily see how far it goes.
It's interesting to be talking to someone that lives in Ireland right now, because
yeah.
yesterday, a friend of mine who's been on the show, Stanley Martin, he sent me mm-hmm. something about a documentary that aired in the UK, basically about
right.
how disability acceptance has progressed out there. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
You do. Have you seen it?
The documentary, no. The sentiment, yes.
Okay. He sent me a link to it, but it says I can't view it. I guess I would need something that you can only get in the UK or something like that, but I really hadn't had time to mess with that part of it, but I saw a couple clips of it, and mm-hmm. one in particular that I thought was kind of pertinent to the points that we're trying to hit on in a podcast like this. This woman talked about the fact that, you know, she would go to the grocery store or something, and basically people would come up to her and say, "Oh, it's great that you're out." She's like, "Well, I need to eat." It's strangely comforting in a way that it's not just America that has these strange ideals when it comes to people with disabilities.
Yeah. Ireland's doing a lot better than, I would say, coming from the States, though, Ireland has a bit of a leg up.
Mm-hmm. How so?
The way that society is ordered, the way you have infrastructure, it's made with the expectation that you and I are going to be living in it. We're not going to be sheltered or cloistered away. We're a part of it. You know, right. I had a very brief living situation right before the pandemic with a guy who was, I don't know what disability he had, but his disability was significant. He lived in the most accessible house that I've ever seen. There were stoves, the level of your chair, sinks, the level of your chair, you could get in and out of everything completely easily.
Wow.
As a matter of fact, it would probably be more accessible to me than to him because he had a big power chair. But he said, you know, I got this place with the help of government subsidies of some sort. That would not happen over in the States.
No way.
This was something that was readily available, readily accessible to him that he could just ask for. I've seen maybe one or two advertisements for accessible sort of appliances in disability related magazines. And that was a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's one example. They also, so a lot of people don't understand that living with a disability, it's kind of like a Jenga tower. It's very easy to remove one block and the next thing you know, the tower is about to fall down. If you go to most big cities, the bus system is completely free for disabled riders. And all the Americans I talk to say, oh, you know, that's special treatment. They're being soft on you. They think that you're less than. But here's the thing. Ireland is a public transportation country. If you don't use public transportation, or if everything's just not within rolling distance, you can't get around. You can't get around. You can't get a job. You can't get a job. You can't pay for anything. You can't pay for anything. I don't really need to explain that. You need money to live in a society. So
as Homer Simpson once said, money can be exchanged for goods and services. That was it.
Right.
But go on.
Thank you, Homer.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, no. But go on. Making sure that one little block is stable, it's sort of nailed to the ground and it's not going to move, mm-hmm. takes care of so many other things. I've also had, when there's not an accommodation in place, you know, I would offhandedly complain about it to an Irish friend and they just kind of look at me like, why are you not talking to somebody? Go call a city councilor, you know, email your local deputy. A deputy's like what our legislators. Talk to somebody. There are ways to fix this. And I just remember going, whoa, really? Like I was in some sort of nether universe, because again, that would never happen. Accessibility is not so easily fixed in the US.
Well, let me touch on that a little bit, because you can speak to this too, I'm sure, mm-hmm. but
sure.
For everything that you can either get for free or like call somebody about really easily out there to make accessible, mm-hmm. you would at least have to pay through the nose to get it here.
Yeah. Or it's not reliable.
Right.
There's a accessible taxi service that I've heard some people talk about. Is it Accessoride? Have you heard of it?
I think so.
Yeah. So you have to call in, you have to make reservations, you have to know exactly where you're going, which nobody does. Nobody lives like that every single day.
No.
Whereas here, if you want to be a taxi driver, you are buying an accessible taxi, end of story.
Okay.
And these are freely available on Uber, which is, by the way, controlled by the state, and an Irish taxi app called FreeNow, which is funny because they're neither free nor immediately available. But they're both really good. And you can get a taxi within like 2 to 3 minutes if you're in a wheelchair, no problem.
So I went to your Facebook profile today because I wanted to make sure you were from Texas, because you had been living in Ireland for a while and I just didn't want to be wrong mm-hmm. about where you were actually from. Sometimes I don't mention where people are from at all, which is, you know, bad on me because not everyone that listens to this is going to know you. So whatever. But one of the things on your Facebook profile is that you're a writer and an actor.
Yeah.
It might be different out where you are, but how do you feel about how the disabled are portrayed in the media?
It's getting better. I think that having social media helps. When we see these portrayals that are negative nowadays, we have this immense power that we can sort of band together and call it out.
True.
You still get people who are too powerful to care about it and who go out of their way to just do their own thing, whether anyone else thinks it's okay or not. There was one instance with a singer, Sia,
yeah.
who made this movie about a kid with autism and then didn't use an autistic kid for the main character. It's funny. Great stuff. Good job, Sia. I think that it's getting better, but at the same time, there are people who are, they realize that it's getting better. So what they're doing is that they're saying, you know, fine. If we can't play by our own able-bodied rules to the exclusion of everybody else, then we're just not going to play. We're just not going to hire you at all. We're not going to give you any sort of opportunities. It goes back and forth. This is true with ableism in general, TV, and I'm like, oh my gosh, maybe we made so much progress. This is great. And there are other times where I turn on the TV and I'm like, oh my God, what did you just say? and why, and can I slap you?
Yeah, I think for people
It's
like
good.
us, it's important to a lot of us to watch these portrayals just to see how accurate they are. Some of them are, but a lot of them aren't. And it could be for a number of different reasons. And I say this, I'm not an actor, right? I'm a radio guy. People know that. But for the most part, if the portrayals are inaccurate, it's either because they didn't get somebody that really disabled for the part, or maybe it's written in a certain way that's unrealistic just because they want that sort of hyperbolic portrayal just because it's not seen a lot.
Or they'll take it really well up to a point, and then you reach that point and it just drops off and it's just a train wreck. Yeah, or the way that they interpret something is like, if you just said it this way, then it would have been fine, but not that way. For example, the disability and eugenics sort of like suicide story that we see over and over and over again. That movie, Me Before You, with Emilia Clarke and the white actor who looks like Superman, like just like three other actors do.
For the record, I didn't see that movie, but I know what you're talking about.
The movie's actually up to a point, it's decent, The connection between the two characters is very genuine and it's very sweet and it's very romantic. But at the end of the day, it's just nothing's enough. And he still goes through with it. Like the first third to half of the movie, I could watch over and over and over again. Not that I would, because then I have to deal with the second half, and that's just why bother?
Again, I didn't see that movie, but I did read about it. I read the synopsis. And just by that alone, I mean, I wouldn't want to see it because it sends such a mixed message to people.
Why give the kind of group your time and your money? That kind of message. I did a critique on it for a film class, and I came in. I'm gonna take them down. This is awful. This is wrong. Sort of the firebrand approach. Then I sat down and watched the movie, and I was like, it was okay. It was fine. It wasn't egregious. I'm gonna wrap up now.
If that sort of message at the end, and again, I'm talking about a movie I haven't seen, but if that message that we get at the end were from the beginning, nobody would see it.
Nobody would see it. You got to sneak in your disability suicides. Kind of like, giving your kid vegetables. You have to.
Make it taste good first and then.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh. Okay, did we really do that? I don't know.
Hey, you said you wanted dark humor. I've got your dark humor
Okay,
here. I'm here with
that's fair enough. I'll leave that in. The first episode that we did was me and my friend Greg, who also went to some of the spina bifida conferences. I don't know if you know him, but Greg Pote from Virginia. One of the things he said was, we're going to make a lot of people uncomfortable. And, not specifically what you just said.
But it's just so
The
delicious seeing that discomfort, though.
Well,
Like,
the idea I think was we're going to make people uncomfortable because they haven't thought about a lot of these things because they haven't had to. Right? If you're not disabled and you enjoy a movie like that, more power to you. But
If you want to be friends with me, we're going to have to talk. But
exactly.
yeah.
Well, let's be fair.
I'm not going to
Like,
bug him.
let's be fair. If somebody that you know sees that movie, right? I think that it's only fair that they talk to you about it afterwards.
If you want to maintain a connection, you can do whatever you want, but actions have consequences.
Right. So when we started, you mentioned that in terms of having a disability, you said that you had a lot to say and didn't exactly know how to say it. Have you thought of any general things that you want to say about it?
I thought that maybe they'd come out with the questions, but since we've had some other good stuff so
Well, they
far,
have, but I mean, we didn't touch on
But
everything.
yeah,
We could have probably, but.
we did not. That's true. Two-part. Basically, my biggest thing was connecting with people at conference. I think part of it was a disability thing, and part of it was the fact that I come from such a, I'm a fairly extroverted person in a really introverted family.
Okay.
So coming into these situations, I would want to connect with somebody and not know how, and just sort of, I guess, come off weird. I would come to conference and I'd want to connect with someone, and I would feel powerless. Like, either I don't have the words to connect with that person, or even if I did, it wouldn't matter. It wouldn't happen. Which I think, in a way, is also, it's what society sort of trains you to believe when you're disabled. They want you cloistered and cut off and segregated. Less so now than maybe 10, 20 years ago. But it's certainly, we're not encouraged to go out and be who we are, where we want to be.
That's a fair point, but you have to understand also that it's a weird headspace to be in, as far as like feeling that way, but also being around other people with disabilities, especially the one that you have.
That too.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Right. Coming into these spaces and having someone who goes through everything that you do, and they probably don't think that what you go through is weird, but 99% of the rest of the year, you do. You start to talk and you're like, I don't know if this is going to come off weird. And everyone's like, nope, it's not. But you still have that sort of sense of, I'm still the weird one. I'm still the odd one out. So you kind of hold yourself back.
We started this by saying that you had listened to Ashley's episode. In you talking about things like that, I understand completely why that sort of resonated with you now. How are things as far as like COVID in Ireland right now?
In Ireland, we're actually handling it, relatively speaking, really well. The Prime Minister, Taoiseach, as he's called in Irish, giving you a little language lesson there, he was, at the time when the pandemic started, the Prime Minister was a doctor. And he picked up really early that we have to be aggressive, we have to act now before it gets too serious. So by now, I think that we have only, and I want to make sure that everyone hears my quotes there, only a little
air quotes, only. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Only 2,000 people have died. A little over 2,000 people have died in the Republic, and maybe 1,000 in Northern Ireland.
Which is bad, but it could be a lot worse.
Bad, but it could be a lot worse. And Dublin is the most crowded city in Ireland. It's kind of, it's like New York. It's got like a million people. It's incredibly crowded. The fact, basically, that Ireland hasn't been wiped out, almost like the potato famine in the 1840s, it's a testament to how serious we've been taking things. I've been in 3 different lockdowns. And when I say lockdown, I mean lockdown. Like, they don't let you go outside of 5 kilometers from your home. We've been in 3 lockdowns. During the first one, there was absolutely no travel allowed whatsoever. I was banned on the US side and I was banned on the Irish side. It was stay where you are.
Oh, wow.
In the other 2 lockdowns that I had, there was an allowance. If you were an American citizen, you could go back home. It shows what kind of situation it is back home. Mm-hmm. When I say that after the second 2 lockdowns, I would look over at what was going on in the States and go, nope, nuh-uh, not happening. We're staying. It just, the situation is so much better over here.
So you think you're going to stay over there, even if you could go home?
Oh, I can't stay.
You can't stay.
So the original authorization that I had was only valid up through June of 2020. In a normal circumstance, they would not allow you to extend that permission whatsoever. Purely because of COVID, I have been given an extension up through April 20th. So I'm going to come back, hopefully, on April 19th.
Gotcha. Which I think is Ashley's birthday.
Yeah. Hey. Happy birthday, Ash. I'm coming home.
Yeah, right.
hopefully, they're the last extension. I mean, I love it here, but I can't keep surviving on, like, bare minimum stuff. Like, I mean, I'm doing fine. I'm not in dire straits whatsoever. It's just kind of stressful. Mm-hmm. Not to be in my own space back home. they said that they were only going to offer extensions up through January, and that would be the last, that would be the cutoff. And that wasn't true. So we'll see.
When I have people on who have disabilities, I like to end my shows by asking a specific question. Whether it's funny or not, give me an example of you being called an inspiration.
I've always found it funny going out to places with people and someone comes up to you and goes, "You're so inspiring. I just, every time I look at you, I just can't help my heart soar." And you're just like, my friends and I are like 8 shots in and 3 of them are about to go home with somebody. But yeah, sure, that's totally inspiring. Yeah, no, I can't really come up with any specifics, but I just find that really funny.
It's just always people. When people use the word inspiring, it's always interesting to know, or not to know, but like to think about, what am I inspiring these people to do?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, if you said that to me in college, I would have been like, well, then you must be about to do some crazy stuff, and you might need to talk about that.
Don't do anything I wouldn't do, and you know, that leaves your options open. But
and if you do, name it after me.
So this was a short episode, in part because Eric didn't have a great connection, but it still represents the longest conversation that Eric and I ever had. I promised Eric a part 2 before he leaves Ireland, and that's mainly because he's got nothing else to do. I want to thank Eric for being the inspiration for this week's show, and thank you for listening. Remember that links to our Facebook, Twitter, and Discord are going to be in the description when I put the show up. Until next week, this is Nate Lurie saying, you don't always have to do a lot to inspire others.